please the court, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Dolly Smith. The ALJ's decision in this case reads as if he believed the only decision he had to make was whether or not Ms. Smith could perform sedentary work. And if he found that she could, then he would find her not disabled. The errors in the ALJ's decision stem from this erroneous assumption. Because if Ms. Smith was limited to performing sedentary work, but was unable to perform her past relevant work, then the ALJ was required to find her disabled under the medical vocational guidelines that are part of the Social Security regulations. The ALJ's decision specifically runs afoul of this court's holding in Strict Matter versus Schweiker. In Strict Matter, this court recognized that sedentary work is not homogeneous and that the administrative law judge is required to determine the physical demand of the particular type of sedentary work that the claimant had done. In Nolan versus Sullivan, citing to Strict Matter, this court held that an ALJ cannot describe a claimant's job in a generic way, such as...
Well, now, what concretely is your complaint about what the ALJ did?
Right. The ALJ found only that he characterized her past relevant work merely as sedentary without discussing the specific requirements, physical demands of the job. He then generically found that she could perform sedentary work and...
You're saying she can't perform the work she did?
That's correct.
And why can't she?
Right. She has arthritis in her fingers and she testified that she could not write or use her fingers for prolonged periods of time. The forms that she filled out indicated that two of the three of her past jobs required typing and writing for 90 to 95% of the day, while the third job required writing reports for 50% of the workday. In addition, the plaintiff testified that she was limited to sitting for 20 minutes at a time because of arthritis in her left knee and cramping in her legs, which may have been due to a venous insufficiency, which was diagnosed.
Did he address at any time the arthritis issue?
He didn't discuss it. He mentions, as part of the discussion, the general summary of the evidence, that she has arthritis. I think he described it as generalized arthritis, and mentions that she stated she had the arthritis in her fingers and in the knee. But there's no discussion in his decision at all as to why or whether or not he was accepting that testimony. Which really raises another issue. And in plaintiff's brief, we raised the question of whether or not the ALJ actually made or found the plaintiff not credible. The commissioner in her brief assured the court that the ALJ did find Ms. Smith not credible. But in reviewing the ALJ's decision, it actually appears that he did not find her not credible. He found that she was generally a credible witness. And then he went on to find that he, however, was not impressed that her pain and other limitations would preclude her from performing sedentary work. So it appears that the ALJ may actually have found her credible, but yet somehow, based on her testimony, found that she could still perform sedentary work. And again, because of the problems that Ms. Smith testified to concerning her hands, limitation to sitting for 20 minutes a day, frequent bathroom use due to her diabetes, fatigue, which could be caused by a number of her conditions, as well as her medications that she takes. If the ALJ found her credible, then this record doesn't support a finding that she could perform sustained sedentary work, and certainly doesn't support a finding that she could perform her past relevant work. The ALJ did just what this court in Strict Matters prescribed ALJs from doing, which is generally stating what the claimant could perform, generally stating what her past relevant work was without looking at the specific details. In addition, in Social Security Ruling 96-8P, which talks about what ALJs must do when making their residual functional capacity assessments, it states that, quote, at step four of the sequential evaluation process, the RFC must not be expressed initially in terms of the exertional category of sedentary, light, medium, etc. Yet that is exactly what the ALJ did in this case. He only says that he found that Ms. Smith could perform sedentary work without performing the function-by-function assessment necessitated by the ruling, which is the only way that he could then compare this claimant's functional abilities to the requirements of her past relevant work. By not first assessing the details of what her limitations were, by not addressing whether or not she could use her hands on a prolonged basis, whether or not she could sit for 20 minutes, only 20 minutes at a time, he could not then determine whether or not she could perform her past work that required her using her hands for most of the work day.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Smith-Sand.
I please the court. My name is Karen Sand, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this matter. I respectfully ask that this court affirm the district court's judgment because the administrative law judge's finding was supported by substantial evidence. I'd first like to point out a misstatement made by Ms. Smith. Ms. Smith argues that had the ALJ found she could not perform her past work, he would have been required to find her disabled at step 5 of sequential evaluation. That's not necessarily true. At step 5, if the administrative law judge found that her skills from her past work were transferable to sedentary work, Grid Rule 201.07 would have in fact directed a finding of not disabled. In this case, the issue is whether or not substantial evidence supports the findings of the administrative law judge. Ms. Smith is not specifically challenging that finding. Rather, she's challenging what the ALJ said about his particular findings. However, the administrative law judge's decision in this case was reasonable and thorough and satisfied this court's articulation requirements.
Did he say he didn't believe that she could not use her hands or fingers?
No, he did not, Your Honor.
Kind of sedentary work would be available to her?
If she had restrictions of her hands, he didn't specifically find that she had any restrictions of her hands other than that required by sedentary work, which limited her to lifting no more than 10 pounds. Ms. Smith, in fact, testified at the hearing.
What's your response to Mr. Schultz's argument? His main argument is that the administrative law judge didn't find that she could, or couldn't find that she could go back to her past work because she can't type that much, even if she could do other sedentary work.
The administrative law judge did, in fact, discuss her arthritis. He noted she did not have reduced range of motion. The examinations generally showed that she had normal range of motion and no swelling of her joints. The only evidence in support of Ms. Smith's allegations that she could not use her hands was her own testimony and one single finding from the probative period in this case. There's one medical report in which Ms. Smith had...
Are you saying the administrative law judge found that she can type all day or half the time?
He did not place any restrictions on her ability to type.
Well, that's an evasive answer. Do you think he actually found that she can type, half the day?
She indicated that her past work...
You're not answering me. Did he find that?
Implicitly, yes, he did.
Well, implicitly doesn't... That disturbs me a little. What do you mean by implicitly?
Well, he acknowledged that based on Ms. Smith's report of her past relevant work, it involved substantial amounts of typing. He then concluded she could, in fact, perform that work. So.
And on what basis did he disbelieve her testimony about her fingers?
As he articulated in his decision, based on his findings of normal range of motion of her joints and a lack of swelling, which he repeated several times in his decision when he was discussing Ms. Smith's arthritis. The administrative law judge, as Mr. Schultz pointed out, restricted Ms. Smith in this case to sedentary work. As the administrative law judge noted, no doctor imposed any greater restrictions than that residual functional capacity finding. The administrative law judge also noted that his finding was supported by the objective medical evidence, which generally documented, while Ms. Smith had a variety of complaints and impairments, generally minimal findings that were sporadic, as well as Ms. Smith's repeated comments that she was in fact feeling well and had few complaints. Based on this evidence, the administrative law judge restricted her to sedentary work in this case. The administrative law judge can also consider other matters when determining that Ms. Smith was not, that he was
now,
not.
Didn't the ALJ say that Smith had stopped working because of chronic arthritis affecting her right hand that prevents her from writing for prolonged periods of time?
I believe when he summarized her testimony, that is what he indicated, yes.
But did he say he disbelieved that?
He didn't specifically state that he disbelieved her testimony as to her limitations in her hands. He did, though, state that he was not entirely impressed with her testimony and her allegations of disability in this matter. In reaching his credibility finding, the administrative law judge stated he was not impressed with Ms. Smith's allegations. He explained why in his decision. He based his finding on the objective medical evidence, Ms. Smith's statements throughout the probative period.
You talked about range of motion. What's the range of motion in your hands, your fingers?
Meaning the specific degree, Your Honor?
Well, that's what he referred to. She had range of motion. Did he talk about her fingers?
He did not specifically mention her fingers, but in his decision, he did not specify which extremity he was talking about. Rather, he summarized them in general, and this was consistent with the medical evidence. She didn't demonstrate reduced range of motion of any of her extremities. She didn't have swelling of any of her extremities either, except for one isolated complaint, which I just mentioned a few minutes ago, the discrete grasp and range of motion of her hands. I'd point out that finding occurred when Ms. Smith sought medical treatment because she said she was having a reaction to her medication. The medication was changed, and that finding was never replicated again in the record regarding her hands. Given Ms. Smith's residual functional capacity for sedentary work, the administrative law judge then concluded that she could perform her past work as a director of an elderly outreach program, a tax return preparer, and a data collector and an entry person. This finding was, in fact, supported by substantial evidence based on Ms. Smith's testimony. Substantial evidence supports the administrative law judge's finding that Ms. Smith was not disabled. The commissioner, therefore, respectfully requests that this court uphold the district court's judgment affirming the administrative law judge's decision.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sand.
Thank you.
Mr. Schultz, how much time do we have? 4 minutes.
Commissioner's attorney is correct that if the ALJ had found that Ms. Smith had transferable skills from her past work, then even at step five, if she couldn't perform her past relevant work, that he could find her not disabled. But he didn't make any finding concerning transferable skills on this record. In addition, I'd like to point out that in Social Security Ruling 96-8P, there's a section entitled Narrative Discussion Requirements, what the ALJ has to include in his decision in discussing residual functional capacity. And it states that it must include a discussion of why symptom-related functional limitations can or cannot be accepted as consistent with medical and other evidence, exactly what this court was talking about. That the ALJ has to discuss the plaintiff's complaints that she can't use her hands because of her arthritis, as long as there's some medical evidence which suggests that she has that limitation. Same thing with the problem that she has in sitting, but the ALJ didn't follow that requirement of the ruling. In this case, the commissioner tries to downplay the arthritis that the plaintiff has in her fingers, but there are x-rays that do show that she has the arthritis in her fingers. And again, there's no discussion of that by the ALJ. And finally, the ALJ treated the plaintiff's past work as if it was all the same. He found that she could perform her past relevant work, three different jobs, without ever indicating that there was any distinction between what the requirements for those jobs were. And in fact, these jobs were different. They did require different activities, and the ALJ erred in that regard.
Mm-hmm. This doesn't have a lot to do with the issue here, but what's at stake if she's older now, isn't she? 65 or 6 or something?
Yes.
What's at stake? If it's remanded and if she is successful, what
it would. And I don't know the exact percentage. I believe that when somebody applies for and receives early retirement benefits at age 62, that there's a 20% reduction in their monthly benefit. So what's at stake for Ms. Smith is 20% of her benefits for the rest of her life. If she gets the disability benefits, she'll then get 100% of the, her retirement from the time she filed for benefit until she passed
her
away.
Her insured status ended when she was 62.
She was 63, I believe, at that time. That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Counsel? Next case for argument, Collins versus Barnhart. Mr.